It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, Farm to Table Talk often focuses on personal journeys from the farm to the table. And today we're going to talk about a journey that brought a 15-year-old girl from New York to Ziegfeld Follies in New York and all the way to California, where she became known as the Tomato Queen in Central California and employing hundreds of people, selling tomatoes to millions of people. And I'm really happy to have a guest today that's gotten to know this lady really well because she wrote a book on her. And my guest is Kyle Elizabeth Wood, and she's the author of Tilly Lewis, The Tomato Queen. Kyle, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Why, thank you very much.
And we're sitting at your table right now and looking out on Monterey Bay, which is a great setting to have table talk. And we're going to talk about someone you've gotten to know really, really well. A lady that just accomplished a lot from fairly humble beginnings. And you've written this wonderful book about Tilly Lewis. First of all, what drew you to look at putting a book together about Tilly Lewis?
Well, my late husband, Richard Williams, was a can manufacturer, and he'd been a can manufacturer his entire life. I went back to college after the last child grew up, because that was something I had always wanted to do, and I was inquiring as to what I could put together that would symbolize everything I was going to be doing through college. One topic for every class was my goal, being a mature student going back. And he mentioned Tilly Lewis, and I said, who the heck is Tilly Lewis? I discovered she is, in fact, the most important woman we have never heard of. I investigated who she was and thought, my goodness, how is Tilly Lewis not taught in every classroom across America?
Well, we're going to get into that, and I think one thing that what we're going to find out is at the end of this journey, too, Tilly Lewis was responsible for producing lots of tomatoes that our parents and our grandparents enjoyed and was an inspiration to many people. But at one point in time, you wouldn't have bet that's the way she would have turned out. I mean, when you started looking into Tilly Lewis, and what was her background in New York? I mean, up to the point she was a teenager and she took journey in a different direction than a lot of young girls did at that time.
Exactly. Tilly was born in 1896, 24 years before women had the vote. Tilly was an Orthodox Jewish girl born in the tenements of Brooklyn. It didn't get much tougher. There wasn't much food on her table. So that was something that she absolutely determined she was not going to be in this life. She didn't know what she was going to be, but poor was not going to be in her world.
Well, now, if she was like a teenager, then did she finish high school?
No. Rarely did any children finish high school back in those days. And if you were to take a look at the 7th and 8th grade books available during that time period, I would guess most college graduates couldn't pass a test given from those books. So the level of education was crammed and much fuller than it is now. So what she did get was great.
Well, I'm going to take a wild guess and say that she wasn't inspired about growing up and being a farmer or a canner or producing food.
Absolutely not. She was hoping to find, like so many girls, a rich man, a Prince Charming.
Well, she did, didn't she? Or is that skipping ahead too far?
Well, no, she did. She, and when she was 15, she determined, because if you have been to New York, you know if you're in Brooklyn, there is so much wonderful way to travel to Manhattan where all the wealthy men happen to be. And Tilly was a cutie. My goodness, she was a lovely girl and complimented on that her entire life. So she took herself against her Orthodox Jewish father's wishes and joined the Ziegfeld Follies at 15. She didn't have much talent, so she became what they called a clothes horse. She stood there in pretty outfits and just smiled and waved. That's pretty much all she did. And met Florindo Del Gaiso, a canner of the highest quality from Naples, Italy.
Oh, now, okay, we're going to back up on that again. But she actually left her home, went in and auditioned and got this job, like you said, with Ziegfeld Follies.
Yes.
And Ziegfeld Follies at the time, did they have road shows or were they just there in New York and people came to see Ziegfeld Follies and these dancing girls and whatever else show was going on?
They did go on the road somewhat. Fanny Brice would do that later. And that's where she met Fanny Brice, by the way, backing up. That was 1911, the first time Tilly was in Ziegfeld, as was Miss Brice. So Tilly met Eddie Cantor, the Durantes, the Marx Brothers, et cetera, et cetera. But while she was doing that, she met men who were dressed in tuxedo suits. And it was mostly just men allowed in. There, women really didn't go. It was a girly show, but of high caliber. So that's what she was doing and hoping to meet a man to marry her. That was her point.
So she did find a man.
Yes, she did. Men. Just one.
Okay. And that man was the first one you're...
Right. Tilly was a smart girl. If nothing else, she was a wise, wise young lady. And she knew what she was doing was on the edge of propriety and tipping her toes slightly over. With that said, she chose one man because she did see women that were choosing gin and sin in a big way, and they weren't doing well. She was paying attention to the ladies that would choose one gentleman and go after him pretty hard until the gold they all really wanted was that piece of gold that lies on your left hand.
Mm. So at that stage, was this the Italian... gentleman that was
yes,
and he was part of a tomato producing company and
massive one, the biggest tomato growing company in the Naples area, in where Mount Vesuvius could be seen. The Del Gaiso Centesario company had 5 canning plants plus one in Paris.
Now, they became an item, and they were a couple. He also had a wife and children.
Well, what the heck? Yeah. 7 kids. Yeah.
7 kids.
You can't get everything.
Were they also in New York?
They were back and forth.
Okay.
They were back and forth.
So she was, you know, a partner with him. I don't know if it's old-fashioned to use the term mistress, but there was a relationship.
She was absolutely the mistress. And Italy was a lot more lax about things. You had, keep in mind, Mr. Hearst with Marion Davies at the time. So you could have coastal wives. You could, in those days, it was absolutely appropriate, certainly not inappropriate, to have one lady in one area of the world and the real wife respected highly in another area. And Tilly went often to Naples to the Del Gaiso's home and is celebrated through pictures in many different ways. Sword fighting with Del Gaiso, with the family around, a big carload of family. So that was not such a big deal. And what she did while she was there is she realized being the mistress, and she wasn't proud of it, being the mistress and never going to be the wife, she paid attention to the growing situation. What she really wanted to do is Wall Street. She was great with numbers. And Del Gaiso was also involved heavily in stocks and bonds. So in Manhattan, together, Del Gaiso and Tilly got together and created Flo-Till. Flo for Florindo and Till for Tilly. And they had a stock brokerage, ag, import, export, out of Manhattan in a big building in Manhattan. So
she had a share of the business too then.
She absolutely did. And she was one of the best stock broker men because everything had to say man on the end of it. And she was fine with that. She absolutely had nothing to do with suffragettes. She was too busy making great money at that time all by herself because, again, she knew at any moment she could be replaced.
Well, and the company's wealth, I understand, was in tomatoes. So they were producing tomatoes and canning tomatoes in Italy.
Exactly.
And they were San Marzano.
The San Marzano, yes.
And people got used to, if they were going to have these great Italian tomatoes, they were importing them from Italy,
mm-hmm.
and they were set up in New York that they could import them and sell them. And but then something came along that we're talking about now, a Smoot-Hawley law, which was putting huge tariffs on imports. And that changed their approach, didn't it?
Right. But we're going to back up just a tiny bit, if you don't mind. What occurred is Tilly had been asked by the brother who was in charge of Delgado Centenario if she would consider looking into growing the San Marzano in America. And this was about 1924, at which point Tilly lived near the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens, where they were at the time working on tomatoes within the laboratories at the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens. So Tilly researched, and she does state in her papers, she doesn't quite tell the whole story, but I researched it and found what she was doing. So she did that. And so she always had a backup plan. And throughout her business career, having a backup plan of what's next was her claim to fame and why she ended up, end of story, extremely wealthy in her own right in every way, shape, or form. But she learned how to grow tomatoes literally, really from the ground up, from the roots up. Disease, she learned all the pests that could possibly be a problem for them. And she was told time and again, the San Marzano will not grow in America, period. So she looked for what place could possibly be that perfect Mediterranean climate that matched with Naples. In America, there's plenty of places that'll grow tomatoes, as all of us, all of you who are tomato growers know, that will grow tomatoes in general and wonderful tomatoes. But the San Marzano, you all know, is a tricky, tricky, tricky deal to grow. And she found that there's a certain area in the Central Valley of California that has the same Mediterranean climate and soil. With that, she went back. Delgado says, no, not yet. It's 1924, 1926. Stocks are going crazy. They stick with that. But Tilly still had that in her back pocket, in her pocketbook. And then that little thing happened in 1929, October.
Oh, yeah, the depression.
No, the crash. The big stock market crash, which began the depression. And the Smoot-Hawley tariff grew out of that, with the President Hoover trying to keep ag products, farmers in America, it was meant well, safe from foreign imports at this point in time. Exports, fine, but imports, no. So farmers to be protected, import this 50% tariff on ag products and ag products alone. But what happened was the entire world decided, hey, if agriculture is going to be protected, all businesses want to be protected, which didn't work. And that put the country into a complete worse, massive, we all know what happened. That way it became from a depression, which happened often, to the Great Depression.
It's a cautionary tale, because there's always tendencies to go for protection. And there has been again recently of picking,
right,
I don't know, washing machines and solar panels, putting a big tariff on, and everybody fears that that could
exactly
like
so so at this so at the same time, what was going on in Italy is you had that guy Mussolini. You remember Mussolini, right? Mussolini is now rattling sabers, and he hadn't been doing that. So we did not dislike Italy at this point. Tilly was enjoying the dickens out of going back and forth to Italy, but now Mussolini may go, and the Delgado family in Italy can see that's a possibility. So they want ASAP, as soon as possible, Tilly to get something out of Italy and growing for them on their behalf in America. They can't do it because of Smoot-Hawley. They would have done it. They didn't need her. If it hadn't have been for Smoot-Hawley, once again, Tilly throughout her life took advantage of terrible things. Folks out there, take this to heart. When something terrible happens, rather than, as Tilly would say, don't wring your hands, you don't have time, your opportunity is knocking. And that's what she did. She said, hey, I have an idea. You cannot bring tomatoes in, but I can. Make me the president.
Because she's American.
American, Brooklyn born. Little Tilly Ehrlich, yep, said, make me the president of Flowtail. I can bring everything in.
So she's president and CEO, and she has this vision, and it's an opportunity to create a tomato industry in the United States. So does she just up and move to Northern California?
They had it completely planned. Everything was planned and ready to go. So she brought, again, The Delgado family did not dislike her, Florindo Delgado, and sent his son and his entire best crew to help her begin and start in Merced. It didn't work. Merced was not quite right for those San Marzanos, and it failed. Then you had Tilly sitting there going, what am I going to do? Stockton Record posts and makes a big fuss that a ship is coming in. It's 1931. The Daisy Gray is coming in to port. The first ship to come in to Stockton, California's new deep water channel.
Yeah, most people wouldn't recognize that, but Stockton is in away from the coast. And they dug the river out and dredged it out so big ships could come all the way into Stockton.
And they still do.
Yeah.
So it's a sight to see if you're anywhere near the Central Valley and going up Gold Country, stop and take a look at this magnificent deep water port that has in the middle of the country where it shouldn't be. Here are ocean going vessels. And that's what Tilly saw. She saw these wonderful rail lines. She saw this fabulous deep water port. There was no cheaper way to get hard goods out than shipping. So all of these things, and plus the soil, plus the Mediterranean climate, and Flotille was legitimately born in 1934, 1935. They opened up, and those San Marzanos did just fine.
We should talk about San Marzanos for just a mm-hmm. second for people that said, yeah, I've seen that on a can. So what's a San Marzano look like?
Well, it is and it didn't work, mind you. So the bottom line is what tomato growers are growing right now. The different varieties.
The Roma style.
Aroma style. They refer to them as pear-shaped. I don't want to name the companies because I don't want to get in trouble from other companies. But I must say, there are some companies in the San Joaquin and Stanislaus area that I personally know from taste that are so delicious. My husband sent me with a note, but I speak all over the country, please get this. And so I do have a stash of this fabulous tomato sauce coming from, not from Italy. It's coming from our own Central Valley.
They are delicious. And then when you go down through the Central Valley along in middle July through August, and you see the tomato trucks coming from the fields and you could stop, I have done that, and actually eaten a tomato right out of the field, and they're just wonderful.
Right, and there's two different types. You've got the types that are grown in the field for tomato salads and heirloom tomatoes. I could not more highly recommend Amy Goldman's heirloom tomato book. It's almost a pornographic tomato book that will show you every tomato you've ever imagined in your life, and you'll go gaga. And it does have a picture of the San Marzano that Tilly originally intended to grow exclusively. And again, she ended up having it be a variety of Roma tomatoes, was what she actually ended up doing, because she was a smart girl again. Smart girl. She knew what worked, and what worked were the Romas themselves and the normal plum tomatoes. Because those tomatoes you're seeing in those big trucks, imagine that perfect taste on your salad tomato in those big trucks. Well, they'd get squashed. Those are more hand picks right now. Technology is moving in, and if you're thinking of getting a job or doing something as a youngster, think the ag industry. The technology is moving along, and your brains are moving along even more technology to be able to select, pick with robotics, and anyway, go on and on and on. And that's what Tilly did. Tilly was all about the next thing, about technology, about bringing whatever was the most current tech into her world and buying it from America and local Stockton if she possibly could. And that's what's going on now. So you've got, again, and those trucks, those are the pasta tomatoes. Those are the products that are being processed versus the ones that are in your salads.
Well, and they're making me hungry as we talk because there's so many delicious
oh my goodness
sauce. And you know, and these tomatoes, they're kept fresh year round because they're just usually just a couple hours from the plant. So they come to the field and then they're steamed and they're canned and peeled and diced and sauce and paste, and they're fresh.
And it Tilly began this with some of the things that she did. She had on-site processing, on-site specialty labs that made sure the quality was higher. She called it quality and quantity. And that's something she stuck with. But goodness, our farmers now have taken what Tilly did and upped the ante to the processes are just fabulous. And again, a fabulous career for somebody.
So she came out to Northern California.
Exactly.
Buy a house? They rent an apartment? Where they get stay in a hotel? And then they decide they're going to start building this industry?
Well, first they did the industry. She stayed in a hotel. She was Jewish. She tried to downplay that because, and I apologize to everyone out there for saying this, but I'm going to say it, she didn't look Jewish. And with that, she spoke fluent Italian and French, also Yiddish at home. Nobody knew that she was Jewish unless she told them, but she was still Jewish. So when she tried to buy a home, it was difficult because of Jim Crow laws.
Did she have to say that she was Jewish to buy a house? Did she have to tell her?
Well, her last name was Ehrlich Weisberg. Her last name was Ehrlich Weisberg. So they figured that out from that. So on legal papers, she had a problem with purchasing property. So she did buy properties, but Jim Crow laws insisted that she buy resale property. She couldn't buy in a new community. So she did buy mansions. She bought one on North San Joaquin
in Stockton,
and then she bought another one on Willow in Stockton. Eventually, she bought the... And these are both outstanding, they are real deal mansions. Then she bought what she called PS, as in Palm Springs, but it was actually a named estate called Invernada in Palm Springs in the movie colony. And across the street, again, this is little girl from Brooklyn, New York, not a penny in her pocket, to going to Palm Springs and buying the biggest house and property in the movie colony, really and truly. Across the street was Gloria Swanson. Next door, Al Jolson. Dinah Shore lived in back of her. Cary Grant, who lived down the street, would answer the door naked all the time, so he was just not an appropriate house guest to have visit. Frank and Ava, Frank Sinatra and Ava Gardner, just down the way. Janet Leigh. And,
well, this is crazy, but now right. Let's go back to the farmers. Okay. All these movie stars. So she gets there. Did she have any trouble convincing the farmers that this was going to work and that they should grow the kind of tomatoes she needed to?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The first truck farmer that she left with the San Marzano seed, he looked at it and said, these won't grow. He took her money, a $10,000 fee, and the seed that was supposed to can 200 cases, I think. Whatever it was, he did 10%. He did what, and she went back to Chicago and New York and sold the entire pack that she had expected to have. She came back. The San Marzanos did beautifully. The guy didn't do it. He didn't think, well, she was a woman. It was 1934. So he didn't think he owed her anything, and they expected her to fail immediately. Everybody did. Not to mention, when she came out, she was dressed like a movie star in furs and diamonds, etc. And that is not how the average, even wealthy housewife appeared in Stockton in 1934. They hated her, absolutely hated her. She couldn't try on clothes in Stockton. She was a Jew. She wasn't accepted in any way, shape, or form. But she always smiled. She always took it. She never, ever complained. There's not one paper from Tilly Lewis that ever griped. And she said, there's no, absolutely, it's a waste of time to complain.
You know, being affected by that kind of prejudice at that time, how did that impact her in her attitude in hiring people as she started building plants and having, you know, having an effect on employment in the area? I would think being experiencing that bias, it must have some effect on her attitude in dealing with other people.
Right. Well, some people would have taken it as hurt or a way to get back at people. But Tilly looked at it, especially from her Ziegfeld folly. She took everything she learned along the way and kept the good stuff. And she saw on stage, well, imagine a Jewish Orthodox girl meeting a black man, and there were black people on stage with her. Now, her father probably didn't approve of that. But Tilly saw that they were wonderful people. And there were bums, and there were great people of every race and color imaginable. So she learned from all of these different experiences with all of these different individuals that there are great people all over. You need hard workers, loyalty, and honesty. Those are the biggies. Honesty, loyalty, and hard work. And that is what she looked for. She hired, and it horrified people. So Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath is talking about the Dust Bowl people coming across and being treated so poorly. If they made it to Flotille, if they made it to what they referred to as the Jew Broad's place, and they really did, if they made it to Tilly Lewis's Flotille, they were welcomed with open arms. And she would look at each individual and say, how can you help me? Imagine a boss wanting to know, what can you do? Can you help me? I'm in trouble here. And that's how she would address it. And they would say, well, Ms. Weisberg, I can do this. At the time, she was Ms. Weisberg. This is what I can do for you. And she'd shake their hands and sometimes give them a hug and say, thank you. Now, we're talking with names of Garcia or Weisberg or Rosen or Sanchez or the African Americans. She had Chinese, she had Japanese. She was the first to hire Japanese. And when they later on were allowed out of the concentration camps through after World War II, she promised them in tears, I will be the first to hire you back. You are welcome back. And that's exactly what she did. As soon as World War II was over, they came right back. Here you go. Here's your job. All is well. Big hug.
Those are good stories, too. So from that, she was getting a lot of people established, more employees. And I would guess that then there started being companies copying her.
No. She was still looked at as an oddity. What was going on is nothing followed her. She was the original. She was the only. So when they had Stockton's Businessman's Day or organizations, in fact, Milton Berle was playing several Jewish comedians who were not allowed to stay in hotels. So they were all staying at Tilly's mansion because that's what they had to do under Jim Crow laws. Tilly was not invited as president of Flotille to the businessmen's conferences in Stockton, California, or in San Joaquin, or in Stanislaus County. So she sent her nephews in place because she was a woman and not. It was more for the woman part. They were tolerating the Jew thing with the men, but the woman Jew, absolutely not. So no, she was the only one. She was the only one.
And she had how many plants? She had more than one plant?
She had three by at the end of World War II, she had three.
So there would be dozens or scores of farmers producing tomatoes. There were hundreds of people working for her.
Yes, thousands during the pack.
And then when they were packed into products, and the products that she would have would be these, you know, San Marzano style, or what became other kind of styles too.
It ended up being Roma. And let's back up again. When in 1937, Delgazzo and Tilly began to have, he pitched a fit that the tomatoes were making enough money in and of themselves, and that was it. Until he said no. San Joaquin and Stanislaus counties, and if anybody ever goes there, you drop a seed in the ground and it's going to grow. That is how rich that soil is. And she saw all these fabulous fruits, all of these marvelous products that could be canned, and that's what she wanted to do. She wanted her baby, and she referred to Flotille as her baby, to grow. He said absolutely no, and then he's actually stated, over my dead body. At which point he died. So he did die in 19... She didn't cause it because she needed him for the money. She's a woman in 1937. The war is about to start. She absolutely positively is not going to be loaned. Women were not loaned a single solitary dime at that point in time without a man's backing. And he's passed away, and she was the mistress, and everybody knew it. And she was beautiful. Shame on her. All of these negative things against her. How dare she? But she ended up getting a loan through the assistance, and this is where I talk about the whole LinkedIn, and not just LinkedIn is the company that's out there. But she had these links of individuals the packers and the baggers and the box makers, they were all making a good profit off of Tilly Weisberg at the time. And they saw her failing was going to hurt them. So a whole bunch of men who were her processors and all those other ideas, they went to New York and they found the Bank of Napoli to loan her the money after Del Geyso died. And this is after she sits and has a couple of weeks sitting with Fannie Bryce trying to figure out what they were both going to do. They were both Fannie Bryce and Tilly were both at crisis in their lives. So they figured out what they were going to do. And Fannie went on, of course, to do the Baby Snooks radio deal. And Tilly went on to become the first female captain of industry. She just went hog wild when she got that loan and began in earnest as just herself.
You know, it's interesting when you see some pictures that you have in your book. She's always the only woman there. I mean, there would be all these men in suits and any kind of a gathering. I mean, here she was running this big company, and all the other canners, processors, and so forth, they're all men. There wasn't another woman to be spotted.
She was the only one. She had no role model. She was it.
What did you come to feel was the legacy of Tilly Lewis?
I came to feel that because of prejudice, because of all of the things that women are pounding on the tables about now in Hollywood and across the nation, these are things that have been going on always. And these are things that Tilly Lewis needed at the time. And well, guess what? I'm here now and I'm pounding on the tables to say, historically, you began as a true businesswoman, the first true businesswoman. So here's something I argue, that Tilly is and was at the time involved in anthologies. Now, this is still happening, where a woman, a famous woman, a famous wife, the president's wives, the first ladies, whatever, they're the ladies of this. They're the ladies of that. Women are They're in groups of their dresses. We have no celebrations of women who did something as dynamic as Tilly Lewis. And if you do read Tilly Lewis, The Tomato Queen, she was so much more than that. Her social programs came out. She created union contracts that had never been done before, that were fair for everyone. She walked into companies because she began buying up other companies through Ogden Corporation. Again, it's complicated. When she couldn't get pineapple because Hawaii got hit, she developed ships that canned pineapple because she thought of it. I mean, my goodness gracious, the woman was an absolute genius. If there was a problem, she solved it. And that's how that went. She hasn't been celebrated. Right now, through me, I'm hoping that other people will pick up and say, let's have a movie. Let's have something beyond the book, because Tilly Lewis, The Tomato Queen, is the first book that is a beginning, a middle, and an end of one great woman's life.
Well, you know what? I think that people will look at this message now today, and I think it's a really great time for this to be coming out. I look at the Farm to Table movement, and I see a lot of people that are just getting started, that are taking bold steps, and they are maybe at a farmer's market, or they're making some interesting foods, and they're, you know, pulling themselves up by their bootstraps. And I think it's an inspiration to look at a story like here with Tilly Lewis. And I assume that people that want the book, they can find it at Amazon or wherever else.
Amazon.com and Kindle.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that people will have to do this. And just quickly and kind of wrapping up, Kyle, I mean, what has she left with you?
Is there so much more to the ag industry than just the food you see at the grocery store? But as far as history goes, I know that my purpose is to find people who have been forgotten. Mrs. Lewis, forgotten because she had the audacity to be Jewish and brilliant, brazen and beautiful. That's a crime in America. And that's a crime that Hollywood is missing as far as not picking it up. And Mrs. Lewis wanted a movie. That's in her paper. She wanted a film about herself. My job and my purpose is to see that I go out and find the individuals who have been lost to history that need the applause, and I'm bringing them back.
Well, you've done a wonderful job in doing this on Tilly Lewis. And I also think that there's a message here that I look at, and that is that it's easy today for us to make heroes out of these journeys that individuals are taking that may have a small farm or a small business. But I think it's good to be reminded that you can do a lot of good and become big, too, like she did.
Exactly.
Too. It doesn't just have to be that Tilly Lewis could have done a wonderful job, been a great neighbor and supplied a farmer's market. She ended up being able to build plants, employ people, and walk a talk and treat people right.
She ended up a globalist.
Well, I tell you what, it's a wonderful story, and I really want to thank Kyle Elizabeth Wood, the author of Tilly Lewis, The Tomato Queen. Thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Well, thank you for inviting me. And folks, get out and try some wonderful spaghetti sauce, tomato sauce, pasta, and salsa any old where, and think of Tilly Lewis while you're enjoying.
I promise I will.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.